Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's poppin', my G's? PSA Podcast. Salutations to all, man. My G, what's poppin'?
What it do, man? What's good?
Let's get right into this before we get into the big talks and the meat and potatoes of the show. The movie Black Panther, everybody was going crazy over this flick before its release this weekend. The wife and I went to see it last night. What was your take on this? Because I know you're a big, this is your kind of movie, more than my kind of movie. But, you know, what's this just gross over 200 and some odd million over the first couple of days? If I'm right on the stats that I read earlier this morning, something to that effect. What is your take on this movie, my G?
Very happy about this movie. I think this movie is something that has been lacking and not seen in comic and all the comic book movies that have been popular, you know, from the Avengers to Justice League to The Dark Knight. Well, now you have a movie where people like me who go to movies all the time, we see representation. And one of the movies we see representation in is The Black Panther. What I liked about it so much, and I'm gonna give you a different spin on it. I'm gonna give you a hip hop take on it. Ryan Coogler is definitely a product of the hip hop generation. So I spoke to a lot of people who saw the movie, and you know what I asked everybody? I said, "What do you think about the Public Enemy poster of It Takes a Nation of Millions?" You remember that Public Enemy album?
Yes.
The one with Don't
course.
Believe the Hype.
Yes, sir.
And one of the scenes in the movie, I don't want to people who didn't see it, but there, because they do a flashback in the movie. In the poster,
my nigga, talk
there,
about it, my nigga. Niggas ain't see it. We talking about it, man.
That means something. That meant something to me. Like, that's Ryan Coogler paying homage. Another thing, Ryan Coogler had Too Short music playing in it, because one of the flashback scenes, they was in Oakland. You know what I'm saying? And the music that he was playing was Too Short, and everybody knows Too Short is a legend.
Can you explain
course,
who Ryan Coogler is for the niggas in the back who don't know who he is, sir?
He's the 31-year-old director of Black Panther. And this is why I'm happy that he did this movie. Because they clearly gave him the green light and said, do whatever you want. We're going to give you the budget. So here's what's amazing about it. This is the highest grossing movie in the history for an African American ever. Just off of that, it's a history making movie. Now, in terms of how you felt about the movie, if you liked it or not, that's a different discussion in terms of what it did. It's a cultural phenomenon, what this movie did. There's hashtags that say Black Panther so lit. When I went to the movies yesterday, I went in a white neighborhood. Everybody there in the movie that it was black, and everybody was happy. You know, they was happy before the movie, they was happy during the movie, and when we left the movie, everybody was waiting in line to take a picture in front of the Black Panther. You know, the previews of the Black Panther, you know, that when they show you this is where it's playing, everybody was standing and taking pictures. So me personally, I loved it, and I love the moment. I love everything about it.
I thought the movie was okay. I didn't think it was that crazy. I mean, the special effects were dope. The funny language barrier thing. I don't know. It was kind of whatever. You got to reach on that one. I thought, what was the young boy name who was playing the king? What's his name? MG Jordan. The Jordan. I like him, but
yeah.
Movie was alright, my G. I didn't think it was that crazy. What did I miss that you? My cousin, my father-in-law, like, what did I miss, my nigga? I missed something. That all you niggas going crazy over this shit.
You missed a lot, man.
Nothing.
It could be a longer discussion. But if you feel you didn't get it, then it'll be very difficult to explain to you. Because if you don't have that feel, this movie gave me that. Feel, man. I went in there and I just loved it, man. It's like different parts of a different scene. It's just like I'm watching. I'm like, yo, they're really letting him go there, do what he wants to do. Say, to me, it was just a great movie, man, and I loved it. And listen, it's fine. You didn't feel it. You don't know why everybody who's African American in this country love this movie.
Why? Because
you don't know
black
why
folks.
Oprah, wait a minute,
who
hold
are
up,
looking
hold
for
up.
A black hero? Is that what
why,
we're doing?
You don't know why Oprah Winfrey's treating. Oh my God, this is the greatest. You don't know why Kendrick Lamar's renting out theaters. You don't know why Nipsey Hussle's doing it. Why Game is doing it. Why basketball players are like Dwayne Wade, like they just renting out and letting everybody see this movie. Why this movie has so much appeal to you? You're on the outside of what.
So this movie defines our blackness?
No, it doesn't define our blackness.
I'm just
going
to be curious, okay?
I'm
just
going to
make sure.
We're just happy to see a superhero movie with black people instead of going to see Dark Knight and everybody else. You know how we were proud of
that? I don't support
it.
Maybe for me.
Wait a minute. Hold
you
on. Let me make this clear.
Yes.
Let me make this very clear. You know how proud we was when we saw something like The Cosby Show and why that was a big deal and important
That's
to black
different.
People? What made it so different than Good Times? What made it so different than Different Strokes? Why was The Cosby Show such a big deal? Because it was about black representation. It was about showing black people we're not all in a project like Good Time. There are black people who are successful in life, who live in brownstones, and it was a moment of pride. So we watched it and we loved it. That is what Black Panther is showing us on the film. You know, everybody doesn't have to be 12 years a slave, Amistad, you know, movie Lincoln, like show in a different light. And that doesn't resonate with you, that's fine. It resonates with me, and it resonates with the majority of African Americans in this country. That's all I'm saying. All
right. Did it not resonate with me because I'm not into those kind of movies anyway, like the Transformers and other the Matrix and all those other kind of movies that people, you know, it's a white predominantly movie that guys like yourself who's into the movies like that, so you have a black representation of the white movie, so to speak, we just put our black twist to it and finesse it the way we finesse it. Is that the way I don't appreciate it more? You're a comic book guy. Truth be told, you still have comic books from damn near 1983 and shit, probably. You know? Is that maybe the reason why I don't appreciate it? Because, hey, you know me, Watson. I'm not a movie guy. God damn it, I don't even watch fucking Power and all them other shows that you watch that everybody
kills.
Let me
just say this. When it comes to pop cultural stuff, you don't fuck with it. You don't fuck with what black people are really into. Like, you don't watch Power, which is a big deal to black people.
I don't watch
Love
and Hip Hop.
You know what I'm saying? You don't watch Love and Hip Hop. So when you see why is Cardi B so big? Why is K. Michelle all of a sudden so big with her music? Why is she
like
the
music.
New version of Mary and all this kind of stuff? The point is, Love and Hip Hop, black people culturally watch it. Power, black people culturally watch it. You know, cultural movements that black people may be into, you're not into them, and that's your right, and that's your choice. That's all.
That's not true. I ran to the movies to see Juice. I ran to the movies to see Menace Society. I ran to the movies to see Boys in the Hood. It's just a different time to me. You know what I mean? That's just what it is. I don't like movies. Let's be honest, my dude. Are we getting movies like Clockers and shit like that? Love Jones and movies like that? Those movies
yeah, we
is what
are.
I love.
No. Absolutely we are.
What, a Kevin Hart movie?
There was a big, for example, there was a movie last summer called Girl Trip. It was all about a bunch of black females who did the same thing that white people always get. They get to do these comedy buddy movies where they go away and act silly and be stupid, and everybody praises them as so funny. But now you got a chance to see four black women do it. It made a lot of money. It showed Hollywood that guess what? You can put big budget behind black people. They can lead a film, and guess what? America will go see it. And that's why and one of the biggest stars now came out of that movie and Tiffany Haddish, because Girls Trip was so funny. You know what I'm saying? That's just what happens. So I'm telling you, as someone who has never, ever stopped and will never, ever stop going to the movies, I've been going to the movies. Movies stay fire. You just ain't into it. That's all. It's not your cup of tea.
But I went to support. I went to support Black Panther. I went to support Spence. Me and I took the wife and watched it. She liked it. She wasn't impressed. Both of us were kind of like, okay. Now, my cousin and his girl, now, a different story. They was going fucking crazy. This nigga was like telling me to move my seat. Like, he was in the driving and shit. This nigga telling me to move my seat, like, move my head. Like, this nigga was like all into the fucking movie, man. Shout out to my cousin real quick. Did you like the way it ended, though?
I love the way it ended. You missed the whole point of the whole movie. You missed the whole point of the whole movie if you didn't like the way it ended. You missed the whole point of the movie if you didn't like the way it ended.
Right. That's our take on the Black Panther movie. I say people going extra crazy with it. And I tweeted out yesterday. I'm like, all right, just left the movie. Just left the drive-in. Okay? That's what it is, man. Appreciation time, sir. Let's go to Brooklyn, my G. Your stomping grounds, Bedford-Stuyvesant, Bed-Stuy, home of the notorious B.I.G., the residents
and
of Mr. Watson here.
And Big Daddy Kane and Jay-Z. And Big Daddy Kane and Jay-Z and Papoose.
Big Daddy
and
Kane,
Papoose.
Jay-Z, Papoose.
Big Daddy Kane, Jay-Z, Papoose. Big, yeah.
Mano,
and Big.
Mano too, right?
Mano, right up the block from me. Literally, right up the block. No sitting gates.
Okay. I say Iron Mike Tyson. You say what, my G?
One of the biggest sports personalities, biggest sports stars in the decade of the 80s and the early 90s. Mike Tyson, I would say, was second to Michael Jordan or first to Michael Jordan in his prime run of 86
wow.
to 90. The reason why, it's not wow, it's a fact. It's a fact. Because when Mike Tyson was winning championships in 1986, Jordan ain't win his first title until 1991. So Mike Tyson was already a champion before Jordan was. One thing that why Mike Tyson resonates with me so much is because his entire reign was my entire high school career, 86 to 1990. Mike Tyson won his first championship in 86 to when he lost to Buster Douglas in 1990. But just think about that. My entire high school existence, Mike Tyson was a hero to me. You know, I had come from being young, watching Muhammad Ali and Sugar Ray Leonard. Like, that's who I knew. You know, I know about Larry Holmes. But it was Mike Tyson that I just loved him. His impact was so impactful just to everybody. We couldn't believe this young dude was just knocking everybody out. 20 years old, champion at 20. At 20 years old. Nobody does that no more. And not only that, but he also, during the height of his popularity, Nintendo came out with a game called Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Punch-Out.
So
classic.
Everybody who had Nintendo had that game, and we would play
0073437886. That's straight to Mike Tyson if you want
to play
skip all the other bum niggas.
Right, just to play Mike Tyson. So it was a big deal. So and during that period, a Mike Tyson fight was an event.
Oof,
it was a party.
A movie.
It was who? How are you going to see it? And it was just a big, big deal.
Mr. Watson.
And then
if you go back to his
from Brownsville and Brooklyn, it just made it even more special. It meant
that is true. It put sauce behind it. Right.
Yeah.
Now this dude had 38 arrests as a juvenile, my nigga. And I want to get your take, especially when after his juvenile sentences or whatever. Customato and Teddy Alice brought him into his crib, my dude, and basically molded him to being a boxer. What is your take on Customato and Teddy Alice playing Customato being a father figure, basically, to Mike Tyson and being a white man on top of it that Mike Tyson actually listened to? An old man on top of that.
Well, they took a teenage Mike Tyson, 15 years old.
Right.
So remember, when you're a teenager, you can still be young and impressionable. Mike Tyson was very gifted, and they saw, wow, we have somebody who potentially could be a champion. So you get him out of a negative environment. The negative environment was he grew up in the crack era of New York City. And Brownsville during this period is arguably one of the roughest parts of Brooklyn during that era, hands down.
War zone.
And Mike Tyson
Warzone.
Was running crazy during that period. So it's a great thing that they found him and molded him into a boxer. You know, but it wasn't like he still wasn't getting in trouble. He was getting in a lot of trouble while he was with them. They had to pay for abortions. There was a whole bunch of stuff. They had to pull out, one of them had to pull out a gun on him. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they took him out of there, took him out of his environment, molded him to a champion. But he was still, as we know, Mike Tyson stayed who he was. He stayed true to who he was.
Yeah, but they molded him into the 1982 Olympics when he won the whole Olympics and shit. All them fucking boys were scared to fight him and shit. Mike Tyson being a soft-spoken individual, and that soft-spoken individual is totally different than what we see when he's knocking niggas' heads off. Like, his voice and his ferocious mentality in the ring, wasn't it? I mean, that was always the joke, wasn't it?
That was the biggest joke, because he talked soft but knocked you out in the first round. America had a love affair with Mike Tyson.
Oh,
I had a
man.
Love affair with Mike Tyson. They hadn't seen it. And Mike Tyson was the heavyweight champion when being the heavyweight champion was one of the most important sports titles in the world. So for
not like now.
A guy like Klitschko could have the belt, right? Mm. Nobody would give a fuck. Like, it doesn't hold weight. That's why you got guys in lower divisions who are the biggest stars in boxing. It was never that way during Mike Tyson's era. Whoever held the heavyweight belt was the de facto number one boxer, period. No debate. Larry Holmes, Muhammad Ali, George Foreman. Like, it just no question.
Damn, he did Larry Holmes dirty, man. Jesus, man. That was sad. Sad to put that in there. That was... when Cuss died, though, a year before Mike Tyson won his belt, Cuss D'Amato died, age 20, to win the first, be the youngest heavyweight champion ever. Do you think that feat will ever be broken again?
I don't know. I can't say it'll never be broken again. I just don't know if it'll be broken again. I'm not going to say it won't happen again. I'm just saying we had never seen it up until that point. So it was historical. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he beat Trevor Burbick and... He was 20. Like, I don't think people realize 20 years old heavyweight champion.
That's...
That is unheard of.
Wow.
And the thing is, because I was younger than him. I was 14 years old. That seemed old to me. So Mike Tyson always seemed like just an older guy. But me now, as an older person, looking back, when you're 20 years old, man, you're not allowed to go into the bar and get a drink.
That's
so it's just amazing what he was able to do. So Mike Tyson was one of the biggest celebrities between 86. Well, what he showed, and this is what I try to tell you when I talk about sports, when I talk about hip-hop, you could have a limited run of greatness, but the impact can be great. So it was a four-year reign he had before he lost to Buster Douglas. But that impact on American culture was so great, Mike Tyson is forever going to be Mike Tyson. Forever going to be Mike Tyson. You know, a lot of people put longevity over impact, greatness. That's not true. That's just not how it works. Mike Tyson was not the greatest.
I think with that one, I think that's dicey. I think that's dicey. I think some people, on what you just said, looks on both sides of the spectrum with that.
I'll tell you why they're wrong, and I'll give you a baseball analogy. Eddie Murray has a 20-year career.
Baltimore Orioles.
500 homers, 3,000 hits. But never one year did he lead the majors in homers. Never one year did he lead in the RBIs. Never one year did he get the MVP. But every year, 27 homers, 30-some homers, 99. He was just very, very, very good for 20 straight years. And at the end of the day, he has guaranteed Hall of Fame numbers in the pre-steroid era. That's longevity.
Eddie Murray sideburns, man. Them shits are fire, too, though. When he got married in 88 to Robin Williams, when he got married in 88 to Robin Givens and her mother, because it was like a damn package deal, in my opinion, she started to take over seemed like she wanted to be the manager of Mike Tyson. And then when Jacobs died, that's when Don King stepped in. But when Robin Givens came to the fold And obviously, you and I remember the infamous 2020 special of Barbara Walters with Robin Givens and Mom Dukes on there, just airing Mike Tyson out in front of us. I don't think at the time I could really grasp the conversation like I can now, obviously as an adult. Do you remember that time?
I remember it like it was yesterday. He just sat there while they basically said, he's the worst abuser of women in the history of the world. And he just sat there. It was very weird to watch that interview. But the thing is, man, he was absolutely head over heels in love with that woman. Because the thing is, even though Mike Tyson was great, in his mind, he was looking at Robin Givens as like this superstar black actress of the era.
Yes.
And she was at that time.
Yeah. Head of the
she
class
was on TV
and all
shows,
that. Yeah.
She was doing movies. And I used to watch Head of the Class because of her.
Facts.
On,
facts.
You know what I'm saying? On ABC.
Super
I
facts,
watched
nigga.
That. Like, I understood she was. And I think Mike Tyson, in his mind, looked at himself as just this hood dude. Couldn't believe he got Robin Givens. You know? Let's be real. He didn't divorce her. She divorced him. He wasn't trying to give that up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He got out the game and got paid. You know,
but there was
the
manipulation.
Thing.
There was manipulation on her side, and especially on her mother's side. That's a fact.
Right. So the thing I want to highlight is all of this. His off the court problems. You know, he fought this guy in front of this Harlem clothing store called
Mitch
Dapper
Green.
Dan. Named Mitch
Classic.
Green. That was a
Classic.
Big, that was a big, big deal. But Mike Tyson had
Mike
so
Tyson's
many moments.
A faggot.
He had a lot of.
Mike
he had a lot of.
Say.
He had a lot of off the court, off outside of boxing bad boy things. You know, Don King came in, so he had a bad breakup with his original team.
They
suing him. And it was just, he was that, in terms of pop culture and sports culture, he was the top at both at the same time. As an athlete and as just a pop cultural superstar.
I got a quick story, man. The fight with Michael Spinks, right? True story, fam. My uncle and them are ordering the fight, right? They got mad people at my mother's house, fam. Like, it's mad people there. I remember these niggas calling the 800 number sometimes to get the pay-per-view fighting shit. And everybody just white fighting and shit. My dude, true story, my uncle and them was looking for a parking spot downstairs in Caton Avenue, 1829 Caton Avenue, right there with Diplomatics and shit, looking for a parking spot. By the time they came upstairs, the fight was over because Mike had beat Spinks in fucking 91 seconds, my nigga. I remember them cursing Jamaican words, Pathway, like, bad, bad. We're paying fucking $45 for the blood clot fight them. And then, yo, they're just going crazy, son. Like, those kind of fights was like, if you want to fight right now and somebody beat somebody in 91 seconds, don't you feel like you just wasted your breath not looking at shit like that?
Not if you want your favorite fighter to win. We used to watch Mike Tyson fights on HBO knowing he was knocking you out in the first round and be very happy. We wanted to see him knock you out. Let me tell you how hyped it was. We loved Mike Tyson so much. When we used to watch his fights on HBO, I'll give you a story. He fought this dude named Frank Bruno. And I was at my boy's crib. We were watching
the British
HBO.
Brother, right?
Yeah, the British brother. Yo, every time my cousin hit him, we were jumping up, screaming for blood. Like, we wanted to kill Frank Bruno. Like, that's how much we love Mike Tyson. Like, every punch, every hit, we're like, yeah, high five, going crazy. Like, he had that, he gave us that feel. Me personally, he gave me that feel for 8 years. So you got to understand, when he lost to Buster Douglas.
Oh,
it was
man. Son, do you remember waking up the morning hearing that Tyson lost?
I watched the fight.
I didn't watch it because it was Buster Douglas. Buster Douglas wasn't a big name for my family to get the fight. That's why niggas didn't get the fight.
No, here's the thing. Nobody, but at this time, this is I didn't give a fuck who Mike Tyson fought. I never knew anybody he fought. I you know when I found out who Mike Tyson fought? When he fought them, then I'd know their name, like Call the Truth Williams. And knocked his ass on the first round. Like, I'm get those memories because I remember they had these names and they was all big and they was talking shit. He just knocked them. I loved it. But fast forward to 1990, February 1990, man. That fight against Buster Douglas is one of the greatest fights you'll ever see for this reason.
That was hurtful, man.
But it's a great fight to watch. Because you know,
Mike wasn't even fighting back, my nigga. It wasn't a good fight. Mike wasn't even fighting, my G.
Yo, but it was great because here's the thing. The whole time we're just waiting for Mike Tyson to one punch knock him out. And it happened. Mike Tyson caught him and lifted his ass. And we were like, yeah, finally. Mike, you've been bullshitting this whole fight. You knocked this thing out. It's over. What we did not expect was for Buster Douglas to take the full 13 seconds and get his ass back up, recover. Then Mike Tyson hit him with that same uppercut again, lifted him. But he was against the ropes when Tyson hit him, so he couldn't fall.
Yeah.
And that saved him. And then he recovered, man, and then beat the shit out of Mike. And that...
Picking up his mouthpiece, my nigga. All I remember is the mouthpiece, picking up the mouthpiece. That shit hurt me. That shit hurt. You never see Mike like that. We've never seen Mike fall, my nigga.
Picture that.
Like, my nigga, hold on. Watson, you said something earlier. You said a mean fall run. And I totally 100% co-sign that. To see Mike fall like that after that four-year run, my nigga, it was sad, bro. Sad.
Well, here's the thing. Sad. We loved Mike. Let me tell you something. We loved Mike so much. We gave him the 1,000,000% get-out-of-jail-free card on that. Like, that's a fluke. It'll never happen again. We literally...
Yeah, that's real rap.
We still love him. We did not like him at all. And then when he had them war with your Jamaican brother, Razor Ruck. Man, listen. I love those fights with Razor Ruck. And that's brother from Jamaica. Mike had to get that nigga beat down.
Yeah, that's a real talk. That's real rap. That's real rap.
But
you know what's funny, though?
So,
You said February 1990 is when he lost to Buster Douglas, right?
Yeah.
And then you go to 91, then I believe that was the rape charge with Desiree Washington, right? So there was a pattern going on here, my G. Like, we kind of seen the bit of a destruction with inside the ring and the outside of the ring. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Charge shit. Then he got free in 95. He turned Muslim. When he turned Muslim, I was like, okay, Mike. I thought when he turned Muslim, he was going to get rid of Don King. That's what I thought. But he kept Don King around.
Well, Don King generated millions for him.
Facts.
Don King generated millions. First of all, Don King generated millions, and Don King dominated. I mean, everybody thinks Suge Knight ran Death Row. Don King ran boxing, picked the judges, the payday, who gets paid, rank. Like, he was, like, you had to deal with him. Larry Holmes tells a great story. Yeah, I know Don King stole from me, but he made me a whole lot of money. So that was the bottom line. And Don King was getting Tyson paydays that people don't get today. The only person who gets those kind of paydays is Mayweather. Nobody was getting the paydays Mike Tyson got. Don King used to brag, like, yo, people keep saying I've robbed him. I made him $300 million. Like, I made a lot of money, but I made him $300 million. And Tyson will be the first to admit, yeah, I blew it. I blew it all. You know what I'm saying? Tyson was so big of a celebrity. All you young dudes who don't know nothing. And I hate dissing y'all because y'all young. It's not y'all fault, but y'all won't understand this. Tyson was so loved that there were so many people who were trying to discredit this woman and was just dissing her. You liar. You know why you was going over there for Tyson. Like, it was really, like, that was publicly, you could say that, not believe her, and there was no repercussions over it. I mean, that's how much loved he was. They dropped the ball, personally, in my opinion, on this. They were supposed to pay her a bag quick. Get this dropped. The way Kobe got his shit dropped. No, not hush money, just we need this to go away. We need to sell out of court. Like like everybody does who's rich. When you don't want to,
that's a fact.
Like when you settle out of court, it's 100% guaranteed you don't go to jail. You, if there's a 1% chance that you go to jail, you settle out of court. Mm-hmm. And that's what everybody does when you're rich. The fact that they let this shit go to trial, man, is just, in Indiana of all places, was just.
Yes, Indiana of all places. I'm glad you highlighted that, right?
I mean, come on, man. Come on. And
let's be real. That was the talk around the time when people were like, well, this is Indiana. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't going to win that.
So, to me, this was basically the end of the Mike Tyson me and you knew from the 80s. We never...
Yeah, because the 90s was a mad slim shady. Because after the fucking... He got out of prison and shit. He beat McNeely and some other scrub nigga till he got to Holyfield. And we know the story with Holyfield already, my G. The Holyfield...
And this is why...
Put his body bag in a body bag and a body bag.
So let me say this. Which is why I rank Holyfield over Mike Tyson. I consider him a greater boxer than Mike Tyson.
Wow.
Tyson had a bigger impact. Tyson had a bigger impact than Holyfield, but without question, Holyfield was better than him in every conceivable way. You can go to YouTube and watch Holyfield beat Tyson twice. It wasn't no fluke. He didn't let Tyson.
But I like Mike fights. But hold on, but you say that though. But I like Mike Tyson fights more than Holyfield's. I watch a Tyson fight before I watch Holyfield fight on YouTube.
Well, let me just say this: Holyfield has better fights than Tyson's. For the simple fact that Tyson used to just knock everybody out quick. Like if you want to just watch Mike Tyson knockouts, you can watch all of that, or you can watch Holyfield fight somebody like Dwight Muhammad Kawi. As a light heavyweight,
that was a dope fight.
You can watch his
that
battle.
Was a dope fight.
Oh.
That was a dope ass fight.
Was it? Yeah, it was dope.
That was a dope
like,
ass fight. That's a
Holyfield,
fact.
The reason why Holyfield is punch drunk is because Holyfield used to fight people and they used to just go back and forth all rounds, 12 rounds. So to watch Holyfield beat Tyson the first time, I was in denial again. Because remember, I was still loving Tyson. He had fought Frank Bruno again. He fought Bouchel, he fought all these guys and beat them. Tony Tubbs, remember that? Like he
scrub
fought
niggas,
these
yeah, scrub
in
niggas.
The 90s and beat them, and I was happy with it. I was happy with it. They slowly
me
put
too.
Them along, right? But then the Holyfield thing, once again, I was in shock. I never believed Holyfield could
so,
beat Tyson.
Let me ask you this.
But I watched it with my own eyes.
The first time he beat him, right, going into the rematch, did you feel Tyson was going to redeem himself going into the second fight?
Yes, I did. And I did because I loved Tyson so much. Remember, Tyson had – the only person who beat him was Buster Douglas, then he hadn't lost to nobody. And then the Holyfield fight ended with he bit his ear, so it ended inconclusively. So I'm thinking, okay, Tyson's going to get him. And Holyfield beat him down. So –
Were you buying Mike's crying about headbutts though?
No way, Mike. You
that's why I force him to fight
the arm people all the time. Mike Tyson used to headbutt and hit people with his elbow and then uppercut them all the time. He'd run into you. You know how Mike Tyson bobs and weaves and comes up and he was short? He'd come up with his head and hit you. Then he'd elbow you in the face and then he'd come up with the left hook uppercut. And that was it. He used to kill people with that. And they used to look at the referee.
Yep,
hey,
that was
man,
the move. That was my nigga. That was like a finishing move, my nigga.
Yes. When he came in with that shit, there's nothing you can do about it. But
that was like the Jake the Snake had a DDT, Macho Man had the elbow, and Tyson had that move, man. For real.
So here's the thing. I love Mike Tyson. I still love Mike Tyson so much. He was still loved. I mean, let's keep it real. Rappers, let's just say this. Mike Tyson was rapper's favorite athlete.
Oh, that's a fact. My nigga,
rapper,
how many Mike Tyson rhymes have we heard throughout the years? Mike Tyson bars, my nigga. My goddamn Fresh Prince had a fucking song. I think I could beat Mike Tyson for Pete's sake. You know what I'm saying?
To let you know how impactful Tyson was with the hip hop community. The night Pac died, he was at a Tyson fight celebrating
Word.
With Mike.
True story.
True story. And like that's who Mike was to everybody. You know how many times I remember he came out with. People love Mike Tyson so much. Like, Mike Tyson was loved by the hip-hop community. He's the most beloved boxer in the hip-hop community in my life that I've ever seen. Like, they loved him, just like I did. So
Tyson or Floyd?
Floyd by far, man. Like,
Tyson.
Come on, we take up the pom-poms. It's not even debatable. It's not even a debate. Floyd Mayweather.
I like Mike
Tyson
fights way more than Floyd Mayweather fights.
It's not about. So here's the thing. It's not about liking Mike Tyson fights better. Because here's the thing. We're talking about impact.
I don't like Floyd's style, my dude.
I understand that, but Floyd Mayweather was going to go down as a greater fighter, just like Evander Holyfield is going to go down as a greater fighter. You know what I'm saying? The point about this is Tyson's impact is greater than the longevity of somebody. So, for example, you like Tyson's limited run of dominance more than Floyd Mayweather's 20-something
yes.
year of never
I
lost.
Do.
So
I know that's weird comment, boys.
Point.
I know that.
No, but that's
boy.
The point. But here's the thing. That's the original point I've been trying to make, that you do not have to have this longest run to have a bigger impact. You know, sidebar right quick. Bo Jackson had a big impact. It was a 3-year run. It was a short run. But that impact can never be taken away from what he did.
Man,
dominating.
Let's be real, my nigga. If you had fucking Oakland Raiders, if you had the Raiders on Tecmo Bowl and you had Bo Jackson, that nigga had like 5 touchdowns, B. They gave that nigga's fucking power like 100.
Don't ever play me on Tecmo Bowl. Because you don't want that
nice,
smoke.
Nigga.
You
wasn't
right
nice. You want that smoke. Wasn't
you don't
nice.
Want that smoke. Because
it
Denver
wasn't nice.
Had a shot. Here's the thing.
Denver
had a shotgun play. Yeah. Yeah, listen. Denver
nigga,
up
in the
Niners
with Jerry
play.
Rice and fucking
listen,
John Taylor. What are you talking about?
Let me tell you. And here's the thing. I know I couldn't stop you. But here's the thing. Denver had a shotgun. This is a sidebar. Denver had a shotgun play that even if you went to intercept it, the computer would just move you back. It was a glitch that was never fixed. It was a shotgun play. So anytime I ran it, I could always score. People in Tecmo Bowl, I would have to let you score, and then I knew I would just eat the clock out and score the last touchdown. So that's
yeah,
what you're getting on
the
back
out.
To Mike.
The eat the clock out.
Back, but check this out. Back to Mike.
Man.
So now I'm going to give your Jamaican brethren their props.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted Tyson to beat Lennox Lewis so bad, and
me
I
too.
Remember
me
that
too.
Fight like it was yesterday.
It was divided,
Tyson,
my people.
Tyson ran out of gas, and all Lennox Lewis had to do was withstand the early onslaught.
Because
Tyson
nigga.
Came out there mad aggressive. Lennox Lewis was, you know, crawling back, keeping him off, and then Tyson ran out of gas, and then Lennox Lewis recovered from his fear of Tyson and beat the shit out of him. And that
fear.
Was basically the end of my Tyson.
You said recovered from fear?
That was basically the end of my country.
Is that what you said?
Huh? What?
You said recovered from fear?
Yeah, from fear. Yeah, he was scared of Tyson. Absolutely. Watch the fight.
I don't know if he was
the fight
scared.
You can watch it. Just watch the fight. Listen. This is
I got it on pay-per-view,
right?
Man.
Anybody to YouTube,
watch
that fight right now. Look at early
round. I'll watch it again.
Round.
I haven't watched in a while.
Tyson was mad aggressive, and my man was holding him and running back and just, like, acting like he was trying
no,
to survive.
No, I don't think that's scared, though, my G. Just because you're running – I agree. He was running back. I don't know if I think that was scared. You're right. He was running back. I think he was just trying to tie this nigga out. I don't think he was scared, my
did.
G. But,
well, see, okay, let me give you a difference. I don't think Sugar Ray was scared of anybody. I think Sugar Ray was – you know, I don't think Floyd Mayweather was scared of anybody when they backpedaling doing all that kind of stuff. I saw fear in Lennox Lewis.
Nigga, though, I saw it.
Okay.
This nigga acting like he was Mark Sanchez in the fucking Jets helmet.
But here's the thing. That was, to me, officially the end of Mike Tyson as we knew him.
Yeah.
The Lennox Lewis loss. That was it. It was over. But here's the thing about Mike Tyson, which is so amazing about him. That impact me and you just talked about, it was so great that people today look at Mike Tyson as like, a god. Like, everybody just looks at him. I mean, this is a dude who went to jail for rape. This is a dude who had every failed marriage. Like, everything about him was flawed. But that short run he had impacted the American conscience so great that we remember with him. We remember this young dude who was knocking everybody out, and it blew our mind. You know what I'm saying? To the point where Tyson could do TV show, cartoons. He could put him in movies. Like, anything Tyson did. How big a deal was that? That was a big deal When Vince McMahon got Mike Tyson for that to be the
that
best referee, and then Tyson showed the Degeneration X, like, he was already a fighter who lost and got beaten.
Yeah.
Everything, but
sidebar, though, Buster Douglas in wrestling, too, when he was a referee for Macho Man and Hulk Hogan, and Buster Douglas snuffed Macho Man in the grill, remember that?
Yeah.
On Saturday Night's Main
Event.
Yeah.
That's a super sidebar, because I was like, oh, shit, you going back into the vault. You're going into the archive. You're digging in the crate on that one. But this is a perfect example of the impact Mike Tyson had. LeBron James, you'll never understand it because you were born in 1984. So the biggest star of today, LeBron James. Because I want to highlight. So if you're 33 years old, if you're in your early 30s, you do not know how great Mike Tyson was. You can't.
He wasn't in the building. Okay, he wasn't in the building, but.
But my man, it ain't the truth. Like,
that's the truth.
You can tell me how great Sugar Ray Robinson
is. We were in the building for Muhammad Ali, my nigga, but we know Ali was that nigga. But we were in the building for him and Foreman and all that.
I'm telling you, Sugar Ray Leonard, I was in the building for Ali.
I was in the building for Ray Leonard.
And when I learned how to be a woman and I knew how to talk,
Marvin Hagler.
Marvin Hagler was 80s, man. You know, 80s, we was in the building, front row seat in the 80s. I'm talking about 70s shit. We little kids. But we knew that this is the person everybody's talking about, Ali. Comic book Superman versus Ali. You remember that big, giant comic book?
Like, yep.
Ali was a superhero to us growing up, even without us seeing his thing. I'm saying to these guys who are 33 and younger, I'm telling you, y'all do not understand why Mike Tyson is so beloved today. Y'all will never understand. Because you had to be in the building to feel what was going on. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a fact. That's what it is, man. Our Mike Tyson appreciation, man. All right, my G. We've done this before. We covered the 1996 hip-hop debate. If you figures have never heard me and this nigga talk 1996 hip-hop debate, please go take a listen to that on PNC Podcast. But we are keeping the tradition alive. And now we're attacking not 1995. We're going 1994. What did 1994 in hip-hop mean to you, sir?
1994, I will argue, is a top three greatest single year in hip-hop history. 1994. Top three in the entire history of hip-hop. 1994 is single-handedly one of the greatest years, if not the greatest year, in hip-hop history. That's
over
96? Yes, over 96.
Okay.
Because everybody we're going to talk about, in 1994 dropped again in 1996. So they're all coming from 1994. So that's how great 1994 was. Because most of the people we talked about in 1996, we're going to talk about them now.
Right.
In 1994.
What's the first project you want to tackle, sir? What's a standout for you in 1994?
Okay, the first standout in 1994 is the album that me and you went outside and stood online for, and we can tell you the story. Let's talk about the Stork magazine comes out, and they give our album 5 mics. And we read the review. We knew it got 5 mics. And me and you were waiting for this album more than life itself.
Facts.
And the album I'm
talking about
is Illmatic.
Fresh right there.
Jimmy, give me your Illmatic memory when that album dropped. What you did?
Just to tear off the rap off that tape, my dude. Yes, tape era, Common Boys tape. We weren't even in the CD era yet. I didn't buy CDs yet. Was CDs even popping in 94, my nigga? They were, right?
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
But I was still in my tape shit. I'm sorry. It took me a while to adapt to the CD era, my G. I still was popping
tapes.
Same
here, my brother. Same here. I was on
life. Yeah, it took me a while. Obviously, we heard Halftime before. It was on the Zebrahead soundtrack, so we heard halftime before that. Did we hear any more joints on that? I think we heard a couple more. Did we have Memory Lane before that?
Yes, there were joints were floating around on mixtapes at the time.
But just to get the whole package itself, you know, and to hear the joints and going into what the first joint was the Genesis, I believe, and going into New York State of Mind was first.
New York first State of Mind, man. Yes.
And to hear New York State of Mind with Premier.
Time to Start the Revolution, Catch Your Body Head to Houston. Yes, that song. Straight out the dungeons of rap, that song.
Oh, man.
So you got to understand something. I lived in North Carolina. I was in college at a school called Shaw University. Everybody from New York City, we stood online for the midnight release of Illmatic. So if you wanted to know who was from New York City, who went to my school, go to Mr. Freeze Records, stood online for the midnight opening to get Illmatic. Let's tell you how real it was. When you're in college, you broke. You don't have no money if you don't got a job because you're just in college.
Zilch. Nada.
Let's believe we all had money to buy Illmatic. Think about how real it was. You could just dub a copy of it from your man. No. We all had to have our own copy.
You had to have that shit yourself, no my nigga. Yeah, that's
we
fact.
Have to have our own copy.
Like Watson, you my bro and all that, my nigga. But nah, son, you get your version of Illmatic and I get my G. That's just how it is.
But nobody was mad at that. We was all
nobody was mad at that. Nobody was tight. Oh, man. Five Mic Classic. That's an understatement, obviously.
Hey. I'll tell you.
I broke up. Right? I had Illmatic. Yeah. I remember, you know how many times I bought Illmatic over, my nigga?
So let me tell you how real it is. As I talk to you right now, I have my Illmatic tape in my hand. Because you know a lot of times me and you be going back and forth on Twitter, and I like to take pictures of my favorite albums.
Still got tapes. Still got his tapes. Heavy.
As I talk to you, I have Nas Illmatic in my hand. This is clearly one of the most impactful albums of my life. I mean, there's no other way for me to say it. The album meant everything to me. It's the first album of 94 that we decided to talk about because I think it's fair to say this album, can we say this album had the biggest impact on us, or are we going to hit on some other albums that might have had a bigger impact on us? What do you think?
I think Illmatic had a very... Because it just ran 94, my G. It really ran. I mean, it was a hip-hop classic, certified classic, man. Illmatic meant everything to me. One Time for Your Mind. I mean, that was the only song that we probably fast-forward a little bit, but every song on there was fire. And One Time for Your Mind is not a bad song. Just represent. It was just too many bangers on there. One Love. I love Nas' third verse on One Love. Yes, three verses. Some of you niggas can't do that now.
So
neither here nor there.
So let me,
but it was everything.
Let me tell you how much I love this album. A couple of days ago, me and you were having a debate on collabo songs. And one of the collabo songs we were talking about was Life's a Bitch compared to Brooklyn's Finest. And you liked Brooklyn's Finest better.
Yes.
I like Life's a Bitch. Life's a Bitch to me is the perfect hip-hop verse that I've ever heard. It's a verse that is embedded in my brain. I could flow it
AZ's
like
verse?
It's yesterday. Like
Nas's
I know my
verse.
ABCs. No, Nas's verse. I woke up early in my born day.
I'm
20. It's a blessing. The essence of adolescence leaves my body. Now I'm fresh. It was too much for me. That verse was just, I couldn't believe it. This is 20-year-old Nas. Young dude. My God. So, boom. So, we already did a Nas appreciation, so we don't have to beat y'all in the head with that. We talking about 1994.
Right.
So, Illmatic comes out in 1994. Let's go to another album of 1994 just to give everybody, to make every coast feel appreciated. Outkast's first album comes out in 1994.
Fire.
Now we know. Now, me and Three also have an Outkast appreciation. So as you can see, 1994 already has two artists, one group, one artist that we already have appreciations for. Because of how impactful their careers were to hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
Outkast album, 1994. That's the album that started it off. You love that album, right?
Nigga, that's not even an understatement. I do like that album. But it took me a while to appreciate that album. Let's be clear on that. I'm not going to sit there and lie like I liked it off the rip. It took me a while to appreciate that album. like probably in 95, I appreciated more 94. That's keeping it real.
So also, we went to the South. Now I want to go to the West Coast. I want everybody to think everybody's being represented. So I'm going to represent everything right now to highlight why 1994 is arguably the greatest. The Murder Was the Case soundtrack came out, 1994.
Classic.
To put that in perspective, that was the biggest selling first week hip-hop album of the year. Yes, we love Illmatic much more. But in terms of success, Murders Was the Case was
more successful than Illmatic.
It was right after Doggy Style.
Yeah.
It was right after Doggy Style. You know, it got Snoop on the cover in pure West Coast legendary fashion. Murders Was the Case soundtrack. I mean, what can you say?
Classic.
It had all the West Coast. It had all the West Coast legends. In terms of production from DJ Quick.
That was
before
the Dogfather album, right? Because Dogfather was 95,
yeah,
right?
Yes, right. Wait.
Yeah.
Dogfather was 96.
Snoop was still on his shit.
Absolutely. So I want to give love. So we gave love to the South. We gave love to New York. And we showed you, and I'm telling you, commercially, the most successful.
Go ahead. Keep going.
No, I'm saying commercially, the most successful first week in terms of sales with Murders Was the Case. And this is all 1994.
I also want to show love to the Midwest real quick, because obviously Scarface album, you and I talked about this off air, his impact in 94, him going solo after having mad years with the Ghetto Boys, Willie D and Bushwick Bill. Never Seen a Man Cry, Never Seen a Man Die. That's one of my favorite songs from Scarface of all time. I'm not going to hold you. That shit got mad burn on MTV and all that shit. You're on TV Raps Era and all that.
Big time burn. This was his first solo album. It was The Diary. To a lot of people,
man.
Classic album. It was a commercial successful album. He was considered the lead guy to Ghetto Boys. Let's be real about it. So, you know, for every lead group, for every great group, the lead person always is pushed to go solo. And Scarface delivered with The Diary. So you got to understand something now. First solo Scarface album. First Outkast album. First Nas album. Snoop still in his prime coming out, but Murder Is the Case. And we ain't even start 94 yet, as far as I'm concerned. That's just the shit that all you guys know, because they're all legendary people. Now we can start getting into some just pure hip-hop talk shit about why 94 is so great. Gangstar dropped their Hard to Earn album.
Classic. I'm being biased. I'm a Guru fan. You know what that is.
Me and you did the Gangstar Appreciation. Does everybody see the theme here? Everything we have done a hip hop appreciation for dropped an album in 94. Fucking Hard to Earn was fire. Code of the Streets, Tons
Master
of
Bill.
Guns. Come
yeah.
on. Dwick? You forget Dwick was on there? Mass Appeal,
my nigga.
Mass Appeal. Oh,
fire
God.
Out, man.
Yo,
Tons
come
of
on,
Guns
man.
Is my
this
shit, though. Tons of Guns is my shit. I'm not going to hold you, my dude. That's the first song you said, and that was a song. That was a go-to song right there.
So let me give you guys some, to highlight another reason why 94 was so classic. Jermaine Dupri was a superstar at this point, because he had Criss Cross. He rocked them out. So Jermaine Dupri said, yo, I'm going to show y'all niggas something else. I'm going to do a female. And he dropped in what I thought was a female Snoop, because she dressed like him.
Yes, at the time,
like
yes.
Him,
yes.
And it was the Brat with Funkdafine.
Yes.
You know,
yes, Brat.
I mean, matter of fact, apologies to everybody with hip-hop appreciations, because we have not done a hip-hop appreciation on Jermaine Dupri. I promise you that is going to come.
Yeah, that's a must.
That is just a mistake on our part for just not paying attention. But so
yeah.
The Brat dropped in 1994. This is a platinum-selling, successful album. This was a big deal. Remember this song? Remember, you used to get played
Fuck the
on
Fire
time.
Was
like,
big,
oh,
my nigga. Fuck the Fire was, come on, son. My nigga, she was a nominee with Biggie. To have her name with Biggie, Met the Man and them niggas, Nas. Wasn't she a nominee with them niggas for Our Rap Album of the Year?
Yes.
For Biggie, Biggie won, obviously, but she was a nominee, goddammit. Let's be clear on that.
Let's be very clear on that. Let's be very clear on that. So that was a big deal. That you had a female who came out successful. Another album I'm going to mention, and I'm mentioning it because somebody was on this album who became a GOAT. Big Daddy Kane dropped an album in 1994 called Daddy's Home. Now, we did a hip-hop appreciation on Big Daddy Kane, right? We did a hip-hop appreciation on Big Daddy Kane.
That, y'all. Very intense.
So Kane in 1994 dropped an album called Daddy's Home.
Not feeling it.
It wasn't my favorite album of the
Come
year.
Come on, my nigga.
And it definitely wasn't Three's. But the reason why me and you are going to highlight this album is because there was one song in particular called Show and Prove.
Show and Prove was the best song in the whole fucking project, okay?
Produced by DJ Premier, the video was shot across the street from where I live, LG Projects. The highlight of it is who's on that song. ODB, who was the biggest star of the time, Scoop Lover, Shaheem, who was still more well known, and then we had a guy by the name of Sean Carter on that song.
Young old.
To a lot of people, this was the first time they heard Jay-Z. To a lot of people. Remember, this was 2 full years before Reasonable Doubt. Full years.
1994.
So that's the only reason why I highlighted the Big Daddy Kane album for that. So now we're going to go to another guy who, me and you, had a very intense debate, but we gave him a hip-hop appreciation. His name is Christopher Wallace. Francis M. to the SH, phenomenal. Gun rest under the waist by the abdominal. We're talking about him. He dropped an album.
Yeah.
Lame
debut
nigga.
Album on top of that.
Do I have to even say who he is? No. His lyrics speak for themselves. Okay?
Ready to Die as, and I hate to be the New York guy here, y'all, but it is what it is. We needed that album because the West Coast was really on and popping, man. Snoop and Trey was putting pressure on everybody. We're really New York because no shade to the South besides Outkast and Goody Mob. Just Outkast, really. I don't think Goody Mob was really popping like that at the time. And Scarface, they were really only cats in the South leading the charge, right?
Right.
It wasn't as big crop of South brothers out there.
So 1994, Ready to Die comes out. We have a hip-hop appreciation for Big. You can hear it. Ready to Die was...
intense.
It was everything. It basically won all the Source Awards the following year. Big was everything. Big became everything. I mean, he was just... You know Big.
My nigga,
so
hold on.
We don't have to go into it.
All these albums we're talking about, Illmatic, Cass, Scarface, Biggie, like, my niggas is dropping fire albums. Like, do you understand the music me and this nigga have to just, it was just an assortment of music. You could just dig into, okay, I can play this today, I'll play this for an hour, I can go this music. Like, now, I feel like I'm in the era now where I'm just playing 2-3 artists at the same time. In 94, the rotation was crazy, my nigga, crazy.
Rotation was crazy. So I'm going to throw in another artist because before Biggie came out, another Bad Boy artist who had the song of the summer called Flavor in Your Ear. It was the song of the summer in New York. You know, I'm not going to call it the song of hip hop in 94 because there was a lot of great songs. You had one.
It was all over,
my
nigga. Come on. It was everywhere.
But
it was everywhere.
The flavor in terms of the beat and everything. So that also came out in 94. You got big.
Let me ask you this. Flavor in the Air or Juicy? I'm going Flavor in the Air.
Flavor in the Air. But here's the thing. There's nothing controversial about that. Nothing. Biggie's just rhyming over Entume. That's all he was doing to us. You know, because Entume wasn't old to us. We remember listening to it while it was a song.
That's a fact.
So it wasn't a new feel. It's just him rhyming over a beat that we were very familiar with. Flavor in Your Ear, the Easy Mo B beat was just, what am I listening to? And then he had the remix, which is another 5-mic classic remix. So, yeah. So now we're going to give the Midwest real love.
Hold on real quick, though. Cut Next album, the overall album, wasn't all that great, in my opinion. Probably had like 3 or 4 songs. I thought it was like a 3-mic album, to be honest with you.
As
Flavor in the Air was the overall album. It was like,
I agree with you. But the thing is, me and you still both bought it.
Of course, it was huge.
Like,
we had to. We had to.
So,
it was a must.
So now I'm going to another artist from the Midwest who me and you have done a hip-hop appreciation. So we are now... Chi-Town, what up?
For real.
He did an album, the guy we're about to talk about. Y'all know him as a successful movie actor who's dating Angela Rye right now. Common drops Resurrection. An album. Now listen to this. This is where it might get controversial. An album that I will argue is lyrically the equal to Illmatic. I think Common
definitely not production. So we can eliminate the production aspect of it. So we won't even talk about production. Nas wins that. Now we're just strictly talking bars, just rhyming.
Just rhyming. Just the ability to rhyme.
I don't know, man. You're saying equal or better?
Equal.
Equal?
I mean,
I'm not mad at that. I'm really not. Because I can understand why you're saying that. But Nas... I just thought,
Common's
shit touched me different more than Common, though.
No, I love Common,
but 94, Nas' lyrics was just, on Illmatic was...
But here's the thing. By the time...
They touched me, my nigga. Pause.
Here's the thing. By the time Common came out, I was not listening to Illmatic like that. This was in October. Remember, me and you played Nas
you
every day.
You wasn't listening
Nas
to Illmatic anymore when Common came out?
By the time, well, you know why?
Not me.
Because Ready to Die came
out
in September.
Going into 96, my nigga.
Okay, that's cool. I'm not saying I never stopped it, but I'm just saying, you highlighted that we had so much music to choose from. So I could not be playing Nas and be fine with it.
I understand what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
That Common album, great album. So, yes, we highlighted West Coast. Midwest, New York, and thing. Most of the people we, like, think about this. Everybody we're talking about, we've done hip-hop appreciations for. This is why I argue the greatness of 94. Now, let me throw in some woo shit, just to throw it out there, because we did an appreciation on him, too. Method Man. Method Man dropped the first woo album to Cal.
Facts. First woo solo album to Cal. Four mics,
Bring
in my
the
opinion.
Pain, the first single.
Bring the Pain.
First single, bring
my
the
nigga,
pain.
Let me say this, man. There's a lot of songs that came out in 94. Love You Big. Love You Nas. I'm not saying your albums, this nigga's albums are better than y'all's, but first single-wise, I know Juicy was big. What was Nas' first single? Halftime? I got Bring the Pain album, all them joints, son. Bring the Pain? Nah, B. Nah. Bring the Pain was like, it was like a riot song, almost to speak, man. Like, niggas was pushing each other. Like, nah, man. Bring the Pain was huge, my nigga. Huge. Huge. Pause. Look, I got to Bring the Pain, yeah. To Cal, Metro Chef. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
Sandman.
Cal.
PLO style with the blood clot?
Nah.
Sub-Zero? There is gunshot.
Sub-Zero.
Sub-Zero.
Carter Six. Sandman. Yo, my nigga, I love Mr. Sandman, my dude.
I fucking love Mr. Sandman. That was my choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Takayu Stallion. Yeah.
This is Method Man. This is Method's first album. So as you can see, 1994.
Love it.
It resonated with us.
I love it.
It's not even so. Now I'm gonna give you some. So wait a minute. We're gonna give you another MC we've done an appreciation for, who dropped in 1994. Jesus Christ! It's like everybody we did a hip hop appreciation for dropped an album in 1994. His name is Funk Doc the Spot, aka Reggie Noble, aka Redman. There's a Dark Side.
I gotta say this. When There's a Dark Side first dropped, what was the first single? Was it Can't Wait? Can't Wait was the first single?
No. That was the second single. I think it was Rockefeller.
It wasn't Tonight.
No.
But I heard Tonight. Yeah, I think we heard Tonight first on a mixtape. I believe
Tonight was not on that album. Tonight was on his first album. Tonight is not on this album.
Oh, yeah, that's on what the Blood Clot. What the album, my man, Part Itself.
Yes.
There's a Dark Side, though. I know what I'm talking about is We Run New York. That's what I'm talking about. Him and Hurricane G. That was one of my favorite songs on that album. That's what I'm talking about, Part Itself. Tell you how much I love We Run New York, even if it's from Jersey. I never need to handle that, whatever. But that song was one of my favorite joints. But I got to say this. When I bought Redman's second album, it was totally different from what the album was, his first album talking about. It was totally different. So I can't sit here and say, the first day I heard it, the red tape, there was a red tape, Raekwon got the purple tape, Redman got the red tape. When I had it, I can't say that I thought it was outrageously fire off the rip. There were songs here and there. Songs had to grab me. It took a while for me to gravitate to certain songs. Not like what the album. I'm not saying There's a Dark Side was a bad album. I loved it. Four Mics to Me. When I first got it, I was like, okay, this is a little different. Well, especially Marv Deep, you know, when that Spaced Out shit, because Redman album was kind of wild. It's kind of wild. Your thoughts on There's a Dark Side, sir?
I give props to real MCs like KRS-One, Coogee Rap, Buckshot, Busta, me, and I'm from the East Coast. Weird nigga like you will get laughed at. That's Redman. I loved There's a Dark Side. We Run New York, the fucking sample with Karis. What the hell?
Yes.
We Run New York.
That shit was fire. That shit was
fire. Yo, the song Can't Wait.
Green Island was dope too.
Sampling the Mary J. I can't wait to get it on. And then when Redman said, "I screamed like a Fuji on a 6-3 with like Bruce Lee over." Like, that shit was lyrically crazy. It was lyrically crazy. We did a hip hop appreciation of Redman. Love this album. This is another reason why 94 to me means so much. So I'm gonna go to another album before I hit you with the bomb question, because we're talking about how great 94 was. Let's go to Jay with the Damage of the Sun Rises in the East.
A disciple of the Gangstar Foundation. Obviously, Guru, we knew Group Home. Freddie Fox and those guys. Big Shug. But man, oh man, oh man. Jay with the Damage, I mean, Dirty Rod Scoundrels. Come Clean. Niggas, I knew niggas used to rhyme off them beats, my nigga. I knew niggas who would get the instrumental off the tape because it was a single first, and they would write rhymes to both them instrumentals and shit. That album everything, my nigga. Fire.
Let me say this.
4.5.
This
production alone, too. Primo. Woof.
You might have to give it. If you're going to rate the production, you write 4.5. Easy.
Yeah, easy.
This album was great.
But see, Watson, that's what I always go back to. I be wondering how Guru used to feel when he used to, like, my nigga, like, you can't tell me he feel no type of way when he heard Come Clean and Dirty Rod Scoundrels. Like, damn, Primo lacing this nigga with the fire.
This is what I keep telling everybody. This is what I keep telling everybody. He didn't shortchange Primo with no beats.
Not at all. You know, he didn't change Guru. He didn't change Guru. He didn't shortchange Guru.
This is how great Primo was as a producer, man, which is why
Primo,
I said
Primo, hold on. Sidebar, Primo, man. What the fuck you gave Royce the 5'9 and Dave East on that beat? That beat is trash, Premier. I'm sorry, my nigga. That is one of the worst Premier beats. I'm sorry, man. I even text Joe Budden, man. I like Joe. I know you're not going to say it, my nigga, but I'm not feeling the Premier, Premier Royce the 5'9 Dave East joint. Obviously, Joe didn't hit me back. I wasn't fucking with it.
So let me tell you one of my memories about this album, because I have this album too, and I loved it. Now, so Rap City, which was a rap show that came on BET, they used to have rappers host it sometimes. So
yes.
They had Method Man.
I love Rap City.
And when rappers would host it, they would say what video's coming on next, but then they would say something about it. Method Man was rapping Come Clean before he introduced it. And it just let me know that,
that's when
he
knows you fire.
Like this. And let's just say this. Now that we're here, we need to talk. What do we think about the song Come Clean as a hip-hop song?
Classic. Nigga, for me, it's in one of my favorites, my nigga. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to say top 10, but it's just up there for me, my nigga. Like, till this day, if I hear that beat, doom, doom, like that, doom, I'm going to go crazy. That's one of Premier's. That's got to be easily top 5 Premier beats. Obviously, with Group Home, Living Proof, leading the charge.
So I'm going to go to another album that came out in 94 that had a single that I will argue is one of the greatest singles in hip-hop history to me. There was a rapper by the name of O.C. You guys might know him from Dick and Chris. Or if you're older head,
Brooklyn.
You might know him from Fudge Pudge when he rhymed
yes.
with Organized Confusion.
Fudge, Pudge.
But that's for the older heads. But
yes.
On his album Word Life, he had a song called Time's Up. Time's Up is in the hip-hop archive. It's one of the greatest hip-hop songs ever lived.
I'm not
going to
disagree
ever,
with you.
I can't
disagree. You know what? Me and Watson will go through it, y'all. But when he says that, he's like, you can't. There's certain things you can't fight. You know what I'm saying? And you just can't fight that way. He just said, you can't fight that. You can't deny that. I can't fight this nigga on that. No, you just it's impossible. Time's Up was. I mean, for Pete's sake, Eminem had that fucking instrumental flowing through 8 Mile and shit, just to let you know how hard he thought
he
that beat was in 94.
Had them battle rapping over it.
Exactly.
Over that beat.
Facts, nigga.
That's how impactful that song was. When Eminem had
facts.
The number one movie in the world, 8 Mile, and he's highlighting battle rap, and he said, you know what song we use to battle rap over? This one.
I'm going
to
use OC Time's Up shit.
The Buck Wild produced Time's Up. It is one of my favorite songs of all time. Now,
underrated producer? Would you agree with that?
Underrated, by far underrated.
Okay.
So underrated that it's a crime how underrated he is. Okay?
Okay.
Me personally, I'm going to be real with y'all. I like this album. I like Word Life. I was a big OC fan. I think OC is a lyricist. I think he's a pure lyricist. I fucked with this album, Hard Body. Okay?
Talk to him.
But this is another 94 album. But I want to get to this album right quick because we're talking about great producers. We got to talk about P-Rock and Sale Smooth, the main ingredient. P-Rock and Sale Smooth, the main ingredient.
Son,
1994.
Listen, man. Another appreciation that me and my brother did. That's a fact. You know what I'm saying? Go check that out on PSA Podcast also. Well, let's be real, man. Coming off the heels of Mecca and the Soul Brother, which is a fucking classic album. I like Main Ingredient. When I put it up there with, I think if you have a hip-hop conversation with the hip-hop nerds like us, we would say it's not in the same realm as Mecca and the Soul Brother, but it was still a good album. It was still a dope album. I like the album a lot. Four mics for me.
Four mics for me, too.
You know what I mean? It's a four-mic album.
I think CL Smooth is one of the most underrated wordsmiths in history. He's the guy who Shaq would go to write his rhymes for My Biological Wouldn't Bother. I thought CL Smooth had a flow that nobody had. Nobody had. And I thought when it comes to digging in the crates, P-Rock is a fanatical. I think guys like P-Rock and, you know, Q-Tip, they have album, vinyl, record collections that would blow your mind. I think this is just it's a museum to vinyl, because the man sampled. You know, sampling to me is a skill, and P-Rock
has that.
P-Rock is great at sampling, man. I mean,
son, I get physical. Really, I get physical really. Was my joint off the Meet and Greet. Now that I'm thinking about it, all the places.
Oh, you mean, wait a minute.
In the
you
flesh,
mean, like,
in
like
the flesh was
like
my shit.
Sample?
Hold on, my nigga. In
like
the flesh, you're Robbo. You know, sample the cave boys. Where
Robbo.
I'm back, nigga. Robbo, good to go. I got the S-L-O-W,
and
that sounds slow.
And
it sounds
slow with Cook Camp. What's up? I'm about to get in. Girls, I got an example. Girls, I'm pulled. I know exactly what you're talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, I thought you were my nigga. Yo, sidebar. Yo, I thought Robbo was going to be that nigga. That's just my guilty pleasure. I like that nigga. You know there's certain niggas that you know that's in the crew, but he don't get a lot of light. But when he rhyme, you be like, yo, that nigga be spitting some shit. You see something in the nigga, but he don't get a lot of light.
Yes.
That's what I felt about Robbo and shit. You know what I mean?
So I'm going to tell you a song that I really love in terms of flow and delivery. It was a commercial song, but I'm telling you, I think CL Smooth had had a 5-mic perfect flow on Take You There. Won't you take me there? Never judge a book by the cover. Discover the soul,
that
brother.
That shit was groovy right there.
Work from brunette to blonde. The nigga could just rhyme. He was just a pure
son, he was ahead of his time,
my
nigga. He was ahead of his time, B. That's a fact.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. So mind you, this is all, we're all still talking about 1994. And we haven't even gotten to stuff. So now let me just name drop albums that came out that year, just so you can understand.
Let's go.
How
let's
big
go.
It was.
Let's go.
Grave Diggers dropped an album.
I bought
okay,
that.
Okay.
Gotta keep it tall. I bought
dip.
That.
Okay, listen. I have to. I cannot do a disservice.
Take up Sabalad. Take up Sabalad.
I can't do a disservice to UGK. I can't do
a
service to Bone Thugs and Harmony. Now, mind you, I'm naming them. They drop.
I want to talk about one of those groups, though. I got to talk about Bone Thugs and Harmony, man. Listen, bro, I'm not going to sit there and say when they first came out that I was the biggest fan, but as the months and as you've seen them all the time on Rap City, they on every morning you've seen them on Saturday mornings on fucking your own TV Raps with Ed Love and Dr. Dre, my man T-Money, and Todd, one of them niggas and shit. Them niggas' video was in fucking rotation, my dude. For the love of money? For the love of money! Yo, my nigga, I love that song, Bree. Yo, Bone Thugs and Harmony. And somebody brought this to my attention. Shout out to you, because I'm pretty sure you say you fuck with me and Sean Heavy, so shout out to you. Cleveland brother, he told me Bone Thugs and Harmony deserves an appreciation. A lot of these niggas that's harmonizing and doing that sing-song show on some thug shit, they set that shit off. In fact, Biggie Smalls, on Life After Death, he was, as big as Biggie was, he did not have to have Bone on the album. Let's be clear on that. Bone didn't have to be on the album. But Biggie respected the nigga so much that he did their flow. He didn't even do him. He went into their world on his album. That to tell you how much Bone, how big Bone was. And obviously, the co-sign from Eazy-E, which is real huge. You know what I'm saying? I just want to highlight and show love to Bone Thugs and Harmony. Now, obviously, UGK, I can't sit there and say 94. I was listening to UGK. We just keeping it tall up here. We just had real talk up here. But I respect what those brothers meant for the South. That's a fact. R.I.P. Pimp C. And I've always been a Bun B fan. Bun B can rap. Bun B can rap. No shade to Pimp C, but Bun B can rhyme. You know what I mean?
So another group that dropped in 94, who you guys may know for different reasons, was The Roots. Roots dropped the EP in 1994. Now,
tonight, man. You're on fire, my
Now, name. They dropped in 1994, and it was different. But the reason why I'm highlighting it is because you see what all these artists have become. You see what they all have become.
We got a Black Thought. We got a Black Thought High 97, Black Thought Appreciation 2. I want to throw that out there also. Yeah.
So I'm gonna talk about a group that 3 does not fuck with at all. But to me, I fucked with very, very much.
This should be interesting.
It's a group called Diggable Planets. They also dropped Blowout Comb. They dropped the album called Blowout Comb. Their first song, Ninth Wonder, where they're like, "We live in Brooklyn. That's my hood." That whole walk they're doing, I do that walk every day. Coming from the Franklin Avenue shuttle, just walking down Brooklyn. Like,
that's my stomping grounds. That's my stomping grounds,
man. You know what I'm saying? The Franklin Avenue shuttle.
Keep walking, Franklin.
Like, so
shuttle,
in 94.
Nigga. Right by there, by Prospect Heights and the Clara Bar, nigga.
What are you talking about? Brooklyn
Library, nigga. Special ed did this video right there by the Grand Army Plaza, nigga, by the library, my bad. Down over there by Prospect Park.
Why I got to Prospect Park and went outside and got lost? I was like, yo, I don't know why I am.
You went back, Mr. Brooklyn? You?
I know. It fucked me up. It's so embarrassed. I was like, hold on. I don't know where the fuck I'm at.
You're the most New Yorkish nigga that I know. I thought I was a New York nigga to the bone gristle. You are a New York nigga. I'm surprised at that.
Yo, it threw me off, man, because it was dark, and I was like, wait a minute, where's Wendy's at? And I need to see where Wendy's is so I can know where to go, and I didn't see it, and it freaked me out.
I'm going to throw an album at you also. I don't know if you fucked with this heavy. I bought it. Not saying it was crazy, crazy. What about the Beatnuts, though, my nigga? Street Level, 1994.
I love the Beatnuts.
Smash Brothers, you know?
And I loved it. I bought
Juju,
it. And
Juju and Psycho Less, you know?
I bought it and I loved it. Okay? I bought it and I loved it. I fucked with the Beatnuts a lot. Like, I got the Beatnuts and I'm playing them. You know what I'm saying? So, to a lot of people, they're like, who the fuck is the Beatnuts? See, so it's going to get weird because now we're going to start talking about people you guys might not know even exist.
We gotta throw them out there.
No question.
Do your homework,
nigga. Another group I fucked with heavy that dropped in 1994 that I really copped was a group called Artifacts. Came one in Ella Sunset.
Son.
Like, I got their album.
Jersey.
And I fucked with it. Wrong sides of the track. They had this song where they sent the Fuji back.
You see my nigga, can we highlight that song? No, sir. Can we highlight that song, B? Like, I think we got to do is it a disservice not just to take two. Yeah, it just is a disservice not to highlight how big that fucking song was. My nigga, that beat will get your
to this
day,
talk
my
about
nigga.
The beat. Talk about the beat.
No disrespect to their lyrics, but that's one of them beats you can just let just chill, my nigga. It's just one of the beats, like, wow, to this day. Like, there's some beats that's dated. That beat is not dated at all, my dude. Not at all, fam. It really isn't, man. You can rhyme off that beat till this day, man. I can't hear Benny or 38 Special right now rhyme to that beat. That's how ill that beat is to me. God, I love that song.
Okay.
All the facts, man, for real. Then Cannabis rhyme off that shit. Cannabis ripped that beat. He fucking went ape shit on that beat. Ape shit.
Yeah. What a great beat. Now, I'm going to name another MC who I want to do an appreciation for, because when we do the appreciation for this artist, it's going to be very controversial, because I'm going to say things about this artist that's really going to fuck people's heads up, but I'm going to prove it and nobody's going to be able to prove me wrong. So in 1994, there was a rapper that went by the name of Tongue Twister. That was the name he used. And he had a song called Suicide where he took shots. He had a song called Suicide where he was doing back and forth with Tretch.
Was that the first song that really? That's the first song that we heard. We really that grabbed us from Twister.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's no question about it. Like, I didn't know who he was, and I know Tretch was like, and you can tongue twist your ass like you're Chicago. And then all I know is that they played the response. They played the response by Twister. Twister. That was his name. He later on called himself Twister. He later on reemerged on the No Way Out album on the song Is This the End with Genuine and Puffy, right? One day, me and Three will do a appreciation on Twister. And boy, y'all are not going to like what I got to say, because I'm a big fan of Twister. But what it does is highlight is, you guys know Twister from Kanye West. That's how y'all know him. But he came out in 1994, which I'm going to say this. 1994 is arguably the greatest single year in hip-hop history.
It's a fact. That's a fact. It is, though. It's not, though. I think it is. I think it is.
I mean,
I'm not going to hold you.
Just look at the fact, like I'll take it a step further. We also did a, let me name some other people who dropped just some shit. Ice Cube dropped something called Bootlegs and B-Sides. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
We did an appreciation for Ice Cube. It's like everybody we did an appreciation for impacted us because of what happened in 94. I still listen to some of these artists that we named in 1994.
Yep.
Today. That's how impactful 1994 was to me. You know? So.
Wow.
That's 1994.
One more conversation I want to have with you, man. You told me, three, as much as you pump up Casanova, he run NY, he doesn't. You told me, and I'm seeing this boy's name all over social media sites for the wrong conversations, in my opinion, Mr. Watson. This dude has not dropped an album. We also spoke about him being the alleged hottest rapper in New York City. For some odd reason, this young boy wants to show, we want to, so to speak, Styles P and Drag On song, respect his gangster, so to speak, Mr. Watson. Me and you live through the East Coast, West Coast wars. I don't even like these conversations that I'm hearing about no fly zones. I really hate that terminology in hip hop. I don't know who made that up. Let me ask you a question. When niggas be like, yo, when you go to my city, you got to check in. What does that necessarily mean, you got to check in? Does that mean extortion? I got to pay you? Or I gotta drop over 2 pounds of weed for niggas and you and the goons to smoke? Do I got to pay you for protection?
I guess you got to just pay homage and see whatever it is they want. Do they want to come to your show for free? Do they want you to just give them love? Yo, we coming to your show, compass. You know what I'm saying? Like, I guess it's just a pay homage, salute us, since you come into our spot. I mean, that's how I look at it. If you're getting extorted, that means they don't respect you. You know what I'm saying? If they're trying to extort you, that means they don't respect you. If you got to pay for this and pay for that. If people love your music, when you come to the town, you come out there for music. When someone has a popular song, and they come to your town and you want to test their gangster, the only people that gets hurt are the fans. Because then what? The person can't perform because you prove that, look at me, I'm on a dude fighting this dude. I disrupted the show. We proved that we stopped this from coming here. How does that benefit you in the long run? What if everybody's pushing it? So if a song gets popping and then an artist who from wherever he's from is like, he wants to go city to city. But then when he come to your city, you got to be thugged out and prove, yo, I hear you rapping all this shit, but now me and my people's louder than you, and then you can make your 15-minute famous World Star video. So,
Hold on. The individual that I'm talking about, sir, let's cut to the chase. It's Tekashi 6ix9ine, a young boy that I'm seeing being talked about for the wrong reasons. He's trying to show everybody, I guess him and the West Coast are not seeing eye to eye right now. They're putting out no-fly zones to him. Niggas talking about this, that, and the third. What did you take with this young boy acting like he's untouchable? Yes, I feel like he's acting like he's untouchable.
I don't think he's acting different from anybody else. I don't even see what the big deal is. You got Extension who got rape charges going on. You got Kodak Black who got rape charges going on. You know, a lot of these young boys do a lot of dumb stuff. For whatever the reason is, we're highlighting Tekashi, but me and you have not done a show on Extension and his rape. Kodak Black and his rape. We did do Kodak Black when he said fuck black women. So we
yes,
talk
we did
about
do
that. But it's like this is like I don't know what it is, man. I don't know what he don't have enough music out. He just doesn't have enough music out. He has a very popular 2 songs that everybody, the youth, like. It's very popular in here in New York. It's clearly popular in Miami. And he's clearly a big He has a good relationship with DJ Academic because Academic is actually acting like his hype man. You know, everywhere he goes, Academic's there with him. So that's what's keeping him in terms of internet fame. But in terms of how we talk about him off the court, I mean, Pac had a lot of off the court stuff. DMX always had off the court issues. Rappers having off the court issues outside of hip hop is normal. It ain't something that's shocking me. It's nothing that's making me like, yo, really? This rapper got into a no fly zone? How many rappers done went to Detroit to put a no fly zone?
Slow his roll. He needs to slow his roll, Watson.
How many rappers went to Detroit and got a no fly zone put on them?
A lot of niggas. Trick Daddy, a lot of niggas.
A lot of niggas
we've known throughout the years.
Why?
Shit. E-40.
E-40
was going to – E-40's people was going to – they ran up on Big. You know what I'm saying? Like, we know what time it is.
My point is this is something that happens. You're saying slow your voice. You're telling a wild dude. You know who's a wild dude? Let me tell you what a wild dude is.
Why is he a wild dude? Do not compare Keith Murray to the Tekashi 6ix9ine. Don't do that. We know stories about Keith Murray knocking Prodigy the fuck out, my nigga. We know stories about Keith Murray knocking P out. Come on.
And I'm
R.I.P. Prodigy.
But listen to my point. Keith Murray was a wild dude doing things outside of rap.
Tekashi 6ix9ine doesn't come up like a wild dude to me.
You're trying to highlight Tekashi.
He paid for goons, my nigga. He paid for all those niggas with him. No, he's paid for all those niggas that's with him. That's why he's talking extra greasy, my dude. That's a fact.
Wait a minute, man. Who doesn't pay the security detail?
I'm not saying they don't. Do that when you dolo.
If you just want to argue for no reason,
I'm giving my opinion.
A rapper.
How was that argument? I'm giving my opinion.
A rapper that travels with a crew, like let's say when Wu comes on the stage, they're a 7-man group, but they come on stage with 30 motherfuckers. Why are you coming on the stage with 30 people? Because they're your people.
That's how they move.
But yet, let's criticize this dude, Tekashi, for having people with him.
I'm criticizing for him talking greasy to another coast and trying to maybe, I don't know, stir up another East Coast, West Coast shit.
No, he's not. You're giving him way too much credit. All right,
my nigga.
You're giving him way too much credit.
Way too much
You're
credit.
You're giving him way
nigga,
too much credit.
My nigga, every
oh,
day you put Tekashi 6ix9ine. My nigga,
he's
every
stirring,
time you put Tekashi 6ix9ine in a YouTube search bar, the first thing that pulls up, it's not his music. So when you tell me, oh, you just want to argue for the sake of argument. No, nigga. When you pull up his name,
yeah, you
want to
argue
that's
for
the
sake
first
argument.
Thing that pulls up.
So let me say this. I'll tell you right now. If me and you pull up something on 40 Glock, what are we going to see?
Fuckery.
All right. This We've been seeing this, man. See, 40 Glock used to just everything he did had nothing to do with rap. Everything he did. He's running around talking about, you can't come out here. Remember when he was putting no fly zones on people in L.A.? You can't come to L.A.? Running up to people's video shoots, knocking on their window. He was doing that shit. That's what he was known for. So what I'm telling you is, this ain't new, and it ain't even worth talking about because it ain't nothing.
All right, I'm off it then. When he get his head blocked off, we'll come back and revisit that, man. Take us home, man.
Yes, we will. Then we'll revisit it. And I'll say, you know what I'll say? I'll say, you know what, dude? You were right, man. He was just out there. He was fucking reckless, man. He brought it on himself. I'm going to say everything that you want me to say.
Take us home, my G. I'm going to leave that young boy alone. Take us home, man.
PSA Podcast, where you will get the definitive hip-hop appreciation for Twista, the only rapper to have outshined every living rapper in hip-hop history.
We'll talk about it some other time, man. PSA Podcast, you already know what it is, man. I'll let your boys work.